Hey, welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 93, Interview with Nathan Clendenin. Nathan is the founder and CEO of Story Driven, a team of people who make human-centered marketing videos. And in this episode, we talk about story, how our brains are wired for story, the importance of serving others, the role of story mentors in his business, and the importance of putting out work you want to do. Show notes for this episode are available at gwtw.co/93. Are you passionate and motivated to make the world a better place and wonder how you're going to market your work? Chris Martin Studios is a video production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness for those who dare to build a better world. Head to chrismartinstudios.com to see the latest goods produced for people just like yourself. And while you're there, sign up for my weekly email newsletter, The Curiosity Lab. It's a great way to stay connected with Chris Martin Studios and meet awesome people changing the world. All right, you ready for this interview with Nathan? Take it away, Ecamm call recorder for Skype. All right, so Nathan, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little bit about what you do?
My name is Nathan Clendenin. I'm the founder and CEO of Story Driven. We're a Emmy award-winning marketing firm that specializes in human-centered marketing videos. We do product stories, company stories, and really human stories.
Right on. So you were kind enough to share with me about how you started your company, and thank you for that because it was a really awesome conversation to have. And one of the things that stood out was you said people kept asking and I just kept saying yes. And I'm not a stranger to that concept of saying yes, but for you, where are some of the places that saying yes has led you to?
I love saying yes, you know, and I've learned to say no as well. I'll put that caveat. It's important to say no at certain times, but the scenario that for me that leading up to saying yes was I was a photojournalist, and I had done international travel for my master's thesis in visual communication to South Africa. I did a summer project in Spain and kind of done some world traveling. I loved it. But I had all the gear that I needed to do video, and I was just afraid to do it because of, at that time you were in Final Cut 7, and if you didn't get your settings just right, it would yell at you, and then it was a little confusing and frustrating, and there wasn't a lot of great information out there about it at that time. If you can imagine, I mean, there's so much information out there now, it's kind of hard to imagine, but back, you know, before 2008 or 9, that was the case. So, but people kept asking me to do video, and I said, finally just said, yes, I'll do it. And one of them was our biggest and still our greatest client, who said, we want to do a video every month. And so that series, the whole concept was following doctors who do interesting things outside the hospital. And that one has taken us, let's see, and we eventually expanded it to nurses as well, and then just kind of anybody in general. But we went to New Mexico to film a nurse who flies a hot air balloon.
Oh, wow.
We've been all over North Carolina doing doctors that are, you know, skydivers or mountain climbers, all kinds of fun stuff. And just besides that client, lots of work internationally with, like, been to India, South Africa. Haven't done as much international travel lately. It's been focused more more locally and kind of growing our base here.
Cool. Something that you just said that was interesting was, you know, you're following these doctors and nurses in their life outside of work. How has that affected your story process? You know, are you looking for stories in unseen places now, or where are you mining stories now?
Yeah, so that's interesting. I mean, when we did, we're no longer doing a story every month, kind of like on, we do them at more like as they come. But for a while, yeah, we were responsible for finding these stories. And so I was constantly, I had to really think of myself like a reporter and have a beat. And I would go hang out at the hospital and meet people at the Starbucks there, you know, and you can meet some interesting people at a hospital Starbucks, I'll tell you that, because you've got people who just flew in on a helicopter, you know, and they're getting coffees for their team, and then they're going to fly off somewhere else. And you got people who are there because their, you know, mom is sick or whatever. And you've got doctors and research, you know, it's just an amazing group of people that flow through that Starbucks constantly. So I would hang out there and find stories. And, you know, you find certain key people too, that always seem to know what's going on. And you know, you just check in with those people. So, that was, always a lot of fun. And this isn't, had nothing to do with your question, but I'll say like the coolest thing about that, and just about my job in general and everyone at Story Driven, is that we get to meet some amazing people who are just super inspiring. Some of them I think are superhuman, especially some of these doctors who, you know, are just full lives. I mean, one time we interviewed this doctor about his band that he formed from, made up of gynecologists, and their band was called NED, which stands for No Evidence for Disease. And they formed it. He has a recording studio, and people like his band members are across the country, and they send him these things.
Oh, wow.
They send him their tracks, and then he puts it together. All right. So they were interviewing about that. But then he's like, oh, before you go, and we interview him in his studio, and it looked awesome, his home studio and everything. And so we're just hanging out chatting after the interview, and he was like, oh, let me show you this thing I made. And he had, for their annual meeting, he had put together this CGI like thing where he had R2-D2 projecting Princess Leia, only it was their people.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I don't even know how I would do that. I mean, that's not something Story Driven specializes in, but usually you can kind of like, oh, I know how they would, but I'm like, I don't even know how to, and I'm like, when did you do that? He's like, oh, I just figured it out, you know, between like 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. for a couple of weeks. I'm just like, this guy's superhuman. Like, he really, I don't know how, but hey, I'm glad to have known this person. On a, you know, that's exciting. We've interviewed some, at least one Nobel laureate who sadly has passed on recently, but that was an amazing thing to meet this guy who discovered that you could manipulate genes. Hmm. Which is obviously now a huge part of research and treating diseases. So
when you're around these superhuman people, is it intimidation? Is it inspiration? How do you grow by being around these superhuman people?
For me, it's inspiration. And that's really what drives me is being inspired. And I want other people to feel inspired. And that's really, if you watch our stories or if you look on our website, that's really the feeling that we hope people get. It's kind of like, you know, after you watch it or listen to a TED talk, mm-hmm. and you're like, dang, I'm going to go conquer the world. Like, that is an amazing story. And I want to do that. And so that's the kind of inspiration that I hope for. And, you know, certainly some people are intimidating with their credentials and clout and how busy their schedules are. But ultimately, I mean, everybody goes to sleep at night. Everybody goes to the bathroom. Everybody, you know, is going to die someday. And so, you know, people are human. And so being able to bring that humanness out so that the world can connect with them, I think is awesome.
Yeah. I love that you talk about your passion in two ways, telling great stories and serving others. So let's start with story. So what is a great story?
So for me, stories can be a lot of things. And I think there's confusion a lot of times in the marketing world, especially about people talking about, you got to tell your story, or it's story this and that. But what is a story, right? Mm-hmm. I think at its core, I think I like Donald Miller's definition the best, that a story is a character who wants something and they have to overcome obstacles to get it. And for us, that's a human story. That is what we love telling first and foremost. And so we look for that. We look for that character who it's clear what they want. you know, and we can talk about the obstacles that they have in their life and the status quo of how their life is right now. And it's not what they want it to be. And in terms of serving our clients, I think where that comes in is in that story element, our clients are the guide to their customers, right? So the hero meets a guide who has empathy, understands their problems, understands their world, but has authority. They've been there. They know what the hero needs to do to succeed. And so we present our clients as the guide to their customers, the hero. And so extrapolating that out, we have to do that to our clients, right? Like, we have to make them the hero. And I think a lot of times with creatives, that's a struggle, right? Like, it's kind of about my art, or it's about my vision, or my this or whatever. And that's a turnoff, because people come to you because they have a problem. They can't tell their story, or they need help telling their story. They don't need your ego, right? They need help telling a story. And yeah. So we have to put ourselves aside. For a while, we called ourselves guides to our clients, the heroes, but still guide can kind of still be a little like Obi-Wan's a pretty awesome guy. And I think I just changed it. We're Sherpas, you know, yeah. And that isn't belittle Sherpas as people, but you know, Sherpas are, they are experts. They know how to get to the top of Mount Everest. They've done it many times, but ultimately they are there to serve the team that's going up, right? Like, they are there to cook their food and help them make decisions along the way to get to the top. And so that's how we see ourselves, as Sherpas helping our clients go to whatever they're trying to go.
Yeah, that's awesome. How can you not be inspired by that visual image?
Yeah, well, it fits with our brand, luckily, too, because we have these mountains, and I think, you know, the mountain is a metaphor of trying to conquer something big. And also, mountains are hugely inspiring. I mean, how can you not look at a mountain and just be like, wow, that's amazing?
Yeah. So one of the things that you were talking about when we talked last time was about your interest in neuroscience and how our brain is wired for story. So how is our brain wired for story?
Yeah, that's I love talking about that, because I'm not a neuroscientist, but I know some, and I've read some papers. So, you know, with that caveat, right, if a neuroscientist is listening to this, they're probably going, oh my gosh, what's he talking about? He's talking, you know, because scientists are very particular, right? They don't want to claim anything. You know, we run into that sometimes in the stories we tell, helping scientists talk about what they do. And it's very difficult for them, because they don't want to be too specific or claim anything. You know, they want to have a bunch of disqualifiers, which is what I'm doing right now, which is frustrating to people. So I'll stop. In terms of our brains, I think the easiest way to think about it is that our brains are built in such a way, they're wired for story. And so when we communicate in a story format with the hero who wants something and has struggle and conflict, then our brains can take that information in better. One of the ways that we see that is you've got the way that our brain prioritizes information based on the emotional quotient involved with it. So one of those things, the best example is, you know, if you were alive and remember September 11th, 2001, and I asked you where you were, you can tell me. You probably tell me who you're with. You probably tell me a lot about that whole day. But if I asked you about, you know, 1998 on September 11th, you probably have no clue. You might be able to figure out what state you were in, but it's going to be a vague thing, unless that happens to be your birthday or, you know, some other important event. And that's a good example, because that was a very emotional day and just period of time in general for a lot of people, highly emotional. And so our brains that are taking in constant information. I mean, I think we interviewed, and I'm totally going to botch the stat, but I'll just make it up anyway. We interviewed some eye doctors, an ophthalmologist, eye doctor. I'll just leave it at that. And they're surgeons, and they were telling us that the brain, just the eye alone, takes in like terabytes of data constantly. And so if you add all of our senses, that's a lot of information our brain has to make sense of. And so a lot of it's getting thrown away. But one of those flags, I guess, is if there's a high emotional quotient, we remember it. And so what we do with at Story Driven is we use that fact and help our clients' message get attached to the story that we're telling. Because as they're telling the story, as we're going on this journey, our emotions get involved, and we're rooting for the underdog, or, you know, we want to find out what's happening. And so that makes it more memorable to us, and it makes it able for us to repeat those stories really easily, right? Like, you don't have to convince someone to share the story once you've told it in a way that people just get it. The other thing I mentioned about our brains is, and I kind of alluded to it, is this idea of needing to know what happens, right? Like, so once you introduce a binary question, our brains will not let us sit until we find out the answer. And so, you know, I use the example, and there's a write-up on our blog about if I go into someone, I don't have cable at home, and so I don't watch a lot of network TV, but if I go to someone's house that has TV on and sit, and there's some kind of reality show, sometimes, you know, it might be like the Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and I have zero desire to keep up with the Kardashians personally, honestly. I'd rather actually avoid keeping up with them, but if I see it and there's Kim walking in to get her froyo, and she's, the paparazzi are there, and there's this tension, I'm kind of like, I need to find out what's going to happen. Like, even though I don't want to, my brain still won't let me. That's the power of story, really. Is once that question's open, we have to find out. And that's how we use story in a short video context to keep people's attention. And because, as we're all aware, I mean, there's a million things competing for our attention all the time. I mean, your listeners to this podcast right now might be on three other places as they're listening, right? Like, and so there's a lot of competition out there for our attention.
Yeah. Do you ever have to convince your clients that hire you of maybe what their story is, or what their story actually is?
Yes. I think, you know, the ideal client gets it, and they're like, you're the experts. We trust you. But we have to earn that trust too. And so it's really any kind of new client relationship is a trust building exercise. And I try to remember that so that early on we're facilitating that and not just, you know, plowing forward in our process. But I think clients a lot of times will have a hang up about their customer being the hero, because understandably they're putting a lot of money into this project and there's a lot riding on that. They need to get the outcome that they want to get. They need to raise the money or increase their sales or get more awareness. Mm-hmm. They're very nervous once they see it sometimes, that they're like, oh, it's too much about them. Like, where's us? And that can get tricky. That can get tricky. We're in a situation right now where we have a very unique situation. Our client wants to raise about $80 million.
Oh, wow.
And the audience of this video is one person.
Wow.
And the secondary audience is 10 people, the board of this company, that they're going to ask for $80 million. And so there's a lot at stake, right? You know? And some of the feedback that came after the first draft was like, oh, it's too much about this girl. And we had positioned a story to illustrate how, you know, this gift would have a huge impact. And, you know, extrapolated from that one story out, right? But you have to get specific. We have to connect with a person. We can't just say, oh, it's going to affect thousands of lives and millions of lives or whatever. You got to get specific, because that's where we connect, right? And we need that hero and their journey. That's what's going to get our emotions involved. But he's like, I love the story, but can we put more about us? You know, and so we're walking through that tension right now, you know, and someday when everything gets released, I can share the results. But
wow,
every story that we tell, I'll tell you that every story that we tell is a meta story, right? The process of creating it is its own story, which is also fascinating. That, you know, most of the time, because of private, you know, I wouldn't want to share those publicly and give names and stuff, because it's our clients and, you know, I don't want to break trust, but it's a meta story that if you were in our office, you'd be on that ride with us. It's pretty awesome and nerve wracking.
So when you're talking about process and you're talking about learning how to tell stories, is process something that's set in stone and you follow it the same way every time, or does it evolve throughout time?
Yes and no. I'll say you know, it starts out with the same template of the process. You know, we write up a plan, they get the plan approved, then we go shoot it, then we edit it, then we have reviews, and then until we finally, you know, but I will say it does evolve over time, because we find, I mean, we're dealing with humans, you know, we're humans, our clients are humans, the stories we're telling involve humans. So what that means is we're not predictable. You know, you can't put us in the box. We don't behave the same way every time, you know, unlike lines of code or whatever that are supposed to behave the same way, you know, every time they executed. So you have to kind of remember that. And so we've designed a process to catch as many problems before they come up, but new ones always come up, you know, and because the world we're in is changing too. I mean, the world we live in and the audience that we're telling stories to, everything is changing constantly. And so I can't expect our process to always stay the same, but having that process allows us to then build on it. You know, it's kind of like if you have a template for a page on your website, you can always change it, but having the template helps you get, you know, 80% there really fast.
Yeah.
So
how do people start thinking about process that maybe never have thought about it before?
So I think naturally we all have a process. We develop it because we just, unless you're just crazy, we want to do things efficiently, you know? And I think maybe I'd say crazy, like if you're an artist who is an artist for art's sake, right? You might have a really, you're going to have a process, honestly, and it may be inefficient, but you have a process. Everybody has a process, I guess I'll say. And so the importance comes is when you want to involve people in that process, right? If it's just you, then you don't really need to verbalize it, and you're just going to follow it, and it'll be great, right? And you'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, I started out shooting weddings, right? And, like, that's an easy one because you meet with the client, you do the thing, and, you know, it's just a step-by-step process, and it's the same over every time. It's fairly predictable. Weddings are not generally that different from one another, you know, just different cultural differences, like Indian weddings or African-American weddings and white weddings, but generally it's the same idea. And so it's very easy to see a process there. But if you want to share it with somebody, then you need to write it down. You know, you need to take the time to write down every step, and probably just every single step, get as detailed as possible, and then come back to it and say, why am I doing that at every step? This is the key, right? Like, because we're dealing with humans. They're not robots. And so we're not writing lines of code that say execute this and then execute that. You want to have the objective at each point. Like, why do I do this? What goal does this achieve? What problem is this solving? So that we know how to answer the question when the exact steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 below that heading don't actually work in this scenario. Well, if we know that the main goal is to do X, then we can still achieve that a different way. And that, I'll say, that's a tool that we call the parachute moment. Having a parachute moment where you say, all right, something's not working here. Let's pull the parachute. And so you puff up the parachute, and that image of a parachute that's kind of wide and big reminds you, like, all right, we're up here. What are we trying to achieve here? You know, what are the goals, right? And then it gets narrower down to, like, the parachuter's feet, where we end up, like, with the actual result. And so you just have to stop for a second and say, what are we trying to achieve here? You know, the best example is, like, if you're on a shoot and you forgot to bring the light diffuser. I'm going to steal this example we were talking about before you hit record. And so we don't have our softbox with us. Well, do we need to run back and get the softbox, or do we just need the light to get diffused somehow, right? There's other ways to achieve that. So maybe we grab a laundry basket or a whatever to diffuse that light, and that solves our problem, and we can move forward.
Yeah.
So, and that's hard. I mean, I think that's hard. That's our process, talking about our process, but also just building a company. I think you have to think the same way. Like, I don't want to just hire robots who do the same thing. I want to empower them to be able to make these decisions on their own and to solve these problems on their own. So I have to teach them along the way what is the goal, right? And then they could figure out the best way to achieve that goal based on their experience and their knowledge.
Yeah. So when you're building a company, you have to come up with titles. And so some companies, the titles are like, oh, video producer, video director. But one thing that I noticed on your about page is that you have brand journalists. What is that? That's awesome. Yeah. But what is that?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a little bit of talk out there about the idea of brand journalism. And so we kind of took from that. But the idea is that, like, the person who's going to work on your story is a journalist, first and foremost, right? They want to tell your story accurately. They want to tell it authentically. And so we're coming at it from the point of view of a journalist to tell a great story that inspires a lot of people. And so we're doing that, but we're doing it for your brand, right? Brand evangelist is kind of that connotates that a little bit, right? Like we're helping you be the evangelist for your brand. Mm-hmm. So that's really where it comes from. It reminds ourselves too. Like we're not just video producers, right? And I think there's a big distinction there. Like, cause we're kind of in this world where, you know, I said at the very beginning, we're a marketing firm. Well, that's true, but not really, right? Like we're not doing media buys. We're not running your social media campaign necessarily. We're focused solely on telling stories through video. But we're not just a video company either, right? And so I think we want to try to differentiate ourselves. We're somewhere in the middle there where we think like a marketing company, but we ultimately we're producing stories that are delivered on a video.
Yeah.
And that's also a distinction. A video is kind of like talking about the internet. Like you can do a lot on the internet, right? It's a generic word that can carry a lot of things with it. A video is not necessarily a story. Mm-hmm. A video could be a glorified PowerPoint, honestly, which is what happens a lot of times. So that's where also we try to differentiate. Like we're actually trying to tell a story here.
Yeah. So what do they do on a project? What does a day in the life of a brand journalist look like?
Awesome. So, you know, let's say we have a new client come in and we'll have a kickoff meeting. And just like a journalist, they're going to ask a bunch of questions. They're going to be talking about, you know, who's your audience? What are they like? What problems do they have? How is your product or service a solution to that problem? Who are you as a company? You know, what are your goals? What are your what problem is a potential story going to help solve, right? We're asking those questions. And we're in the info gathering stage. So we're just, you know, we call it divergent thinking. We're not judging good or bad stories. We're just kind of like gathering a bunch of information. Then once we've gathered that, and that includes getting into some of those potential stories, like, okay, what stories are you thinking about? And then we talk about maybe there's three or four people and we'll call them, talk to them, figure out what the general idea of their story is, and then we start to narrow that down. And that process can take a week or 2 weeks, depends kind of on people's schedules and whatnot. If you took schedules out of the equation, you know, that would take 2 days, you know. And then we write that up. We say, okay, this based on all this information, this is the story that I actually think we should tell. And that's where the journalist would be like, you know, typing away at the computer, just going away, chugging coffee and like hammering out the story, right? They've done the research, now they're writing it. And for us, I think the analogy is appropriate, like as an architect. You know, an architect, before you build something, you want to get plans to see what it's going to look like on paper, because it's a lot easier to change things on paper or on a computer screen than it is, you know, once the structure starts going up. Mm-hmm. And so we build that blueprint. We call it the roadmap to success. And our clients have a chance to look at that. From there, it's pretty simple what you would imagine most video production. You know, we go shoot it. We conduct the interviews authentically. You know, we're not scripting these people. We're having a conversation, right? And that's, again, where the journalist thing comes in. Like, we're just having a conversation that will elicit the responses that we know are already there because we've called them on the phone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we get it out in an authentic and genuine way. And then we edit it. Put it together. We actually work with some story mentors to go over it and kind of help elevate it a little bit. Then we send it to the client and we start that process of back and forth, kind of narrowing it down to the final.
Cool. You mentioned story mentors and I saw that on your about page as well. And What is that? What are story mentors for you?
Yeah, so story mentors are folks that are outside of our organization. They're in the industry of journalism or some related field. So we have three story mentors right now. Two are journalism professors, and the other is an acting professor who studies the structure of story very intimately. And so we bring them in at the plan. They look at the plan before we send it to the client to say they serve two great purposes. One is they're kind of a third person perspective, that somebody who kind of comes in blind, right? And they can answer the question like, does this make sense? Because sometimes when you're telling a story, you get so into it, you kind of forget to zoom out and go, oh yeah, I'm not connecting these two things very well that are so well connected to me because I'm deep in this story right now, but someone on their first view might not get that connection. I need to make that tighter. So they help us answer those. But really they're bringing to us their years of expertise, their network, their entire history, and these people have been telling stories for decades to elevate our craft, you know. And I think why would we not want to do that? Yeah. You know, they're compensated for it, and it's great, you know. It's a great way to elevate our storytelling. They also come in then at the rough draft point before we send it to the client, so that now they see it and they give some comments again as a third person, like, okay, this connection is needs to be made stronger, that kind of thing. So.
How'd you come up with this idea of not just having a third party look at it, but actually seeking out experts that get story?
Yeah. So honestly, it came out of necessity. Had lost a person who was really the internal story mentor, who was running the stories, and he was really great at that. I was starting to fill in with that, and wasn't as good with that. Like, one of the reasons why I got away from editing as fast as I could is because I would get stuck looking at an edit going, something's not quite right, but I'm not exactly sure what it is. Can't put my finger on it. And I've grown in that area, but honestly, I was like, we need some help with this. And so I just was like, well, I know from my journalism school where I did my master's degree, I know a bunch of people there, and I know our brand journalists also went to journalism schools and different schools. So we just, you know, brainstormed and pulled in a couple people, and that was it. It was that simple.
That's awesome. One piece of advice that you gave me was to put out work that I want to do. And since you mentioned that, I've been thinking a lot about it. And it came down to this question for me of, why do you think people and creative professionals in general struggle with being okay with just putting out the work that they want to do and be known for versus doing work that maybe looks like everyone else or is what's accepted right now or what's safe right now?
Yeah, I think when you start to put money into the equation and, you know, you've got to make a certain amount every month to pay your bills, and like, it can feel risky to, you know, to say effectively, I only do this, right? And it feels like that's what you're saying, I guess. And I don't think that's actually what you're saying by putting out only the work that you want to get back. Because most people are smart enough to know that, like, you can probably do other stuff too, right? Yeah. But there's just this natural thing, like, it could be anything, and you're trying to catch a bunch of different things just because you're kind of desperate to get a bunch to keep the money flowing and keep the work. And you're like, oh yeah, I could build a website and I could take their headshots and I could, you know. And I started out like that because I was a multimedia producer. I mean, that was my first job title, and then that's what my skill. They hired me because I could do lots of things, and so I had to focus, you know, because I realized, like, these websites, I'm not really a coder, I'm not really a designer, I'm just hacking these things together, and it's frustrating, you know, and I'm constantly hitting save and refresh, and that just got really old. And I was like, and they weren't very lucrative, and so I was like, all right, I'm just going to start dropping that. And I had a kid on the way, or I think at that point he was still on the way, but my wife was pregnant, I'm providing, my wife, like, it was tense, but I had, you know, as soon as I did that, I saw an immediate response that I felt differently, first of all. Like, okay, I have this clutter. I'm not a super details person, and those website projects were just full of details, and it feels like the project was never, ever going to finish, ever. And even when you finish it, it's not over. So I have a lot of respect for people who do websites, and I'm not trying to be one of them. But as soon as I had that, kind of took that, it gave me clarity, right? To say, well, this is really what I'm about. I'm going to go 100% into telling stories through video. And that's what people know you for, right? Mm-hmm. So the stuff that you put out there is what you get back, because people see that and they go, oh, yeah, I want that guy. And actually, I'll steal this from, I guess, an online mentor, Chase Jarvis. I've never met the guy, would love to someday, but I've early on followed a lot of his work. I think he's a brilliant business person. He's a good photographer, but he really understands the business. And so he would talk about when he would just do crazy fun projects that weren't paid and put them out there. Mm-hmm. And then people would see them and go, holy crap, I want that. And they wouldn't necessarily even hire him for that. They might be like, we need some headshots. And he's going, all right, nothing to do with this crazy project that was nothing to do with headshots. But they're like, we need that style. We need him, we need what he's bringing. And so putting yourself out there, I think, is the way to stand out. If you're doing what everyone else is doing, then guess what? You're not sticking out. You're going to be stuck. Yeah. So
is that what led you to tell the stories of Durham? In your series, Real Durham?
Yeah. So, I'll be another really honest moment. We were, January and February this year, we were kind of low on business. It was like a lack of prior planning and business development. At that point, we had a very not developed sales process in terms of we had our process for making a video. We did not have the first part of that process, which is getting the clients who need it. We had just survived on my mantra, which it still is do great work and treat your clients really well, and then they'll recommend you. And that hasn't changed. But we grew to the point where we needed to go beyond that and go actually find some business. So anyway, that's the setup. We were sitting here in January and February going, it's kind of slow. What's going on? Let's just tell stories about people in Durham that represent our brand, because that's the kind of stories we want to tell, and they're not for clients, so we can do them however we want. We also experimented. We've created what we called Story Lab, which is a place where we can just try things, right? And it's not on a client project where if it totally biffs, the client's going to be upset or, whatever. So we just tried stuff, and we tried out a new format where we just did an audio only interview. Our hypothesis was that we would get a more authentic interview, and obviously it would just be much simpler, right? We're not worried about the lighting. We're not worried about the background. We're not, so we're just us and a microphone with the person. And then we kept it to 1 minute because we just wanted to set that parameter, keep it short. And it turned out to be an awesome, awesome thing, an awesome way to tell stories, an awesome way to, be known in our community for these stories, and to elevate the people whose stories we're telling ultimately.
Did it solve the problem that you were having when you initially, at the beginning of the year, was that a catalyst for solving the problem?
So it helped, the real solution to that problem was to get out there and make some calls and get some meetings and just business development, and that's really what turned us around. But it helps when people already know about you when you call them, right? Or they're like, yeah, I think I've heard of you somewhere, right? Like, it's not so much of a cold call when they're like, yeah, I know you guys. And so it definitely helped with that brand awareness locally. Outside of our area, hasn't built as much traction, but it definitely helped. We're at the place as an organization where we're still focusing on sales as we grow. There will be a point where we transition more into marketing ourselves, which is, this is more of a marketing effort, right? Content marketing. The other thing, that I didn't mention is, in order to have empathy for our clients who are content marketers ultimately, right? Like, they're running their marketing department. They need to produce content that markets their brand and their company. So in order to have empathy for them, we need to be content marketers too for ourselves. And I think that was also a big reason why we got into it, so that we could understand, not just giving them a video file and like, here you go. Like, we understand more how to actually take this story that we've spent so much time and effort crafting and actually get it out into the world, right? You can't just send a link out there and expect it to grow. You gotta make teasers and still frames with quotes on them and design, you know, we gotta put it out there in a way that it grabs a hold. So that's been huge as well for us, to just have more empathy for our clients and understand how to serve them better.
That's awesome. So what resource, it could be a book, it could be a video, it could be a podcast, what resource has impacted you the most over the years?
That's a tough one. And, you know, I read that question earlier and I still didn't have a something that just jumped out of me. I don't read a lot of books, honestly, because I have really slow reading comprehension, which is why I love business books that are written as fables. I don't know if you've read any of the, and I'm trying to think, there's a book called Built to Sell and another one about the ideal team player, and they make them into an actual story, and I'm like, dude, why doesn't everybody do this?
Five Dysfunctions of a Team is another one that was
Exactly.
Patrick Lencioni.
Yep. And he's the teamwork one is done. He does that a lot. And I think it's a brilliant way. And I think there's a lot of work and research to be done in the education world in terms of using story. But all that said, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I love podcasts. Ira Glass is definitely my hero. The lead founder and producer from This American Life. And the podcasts themselves, obviously, or the radio show that turned into a podcast, are very inspiring. But he has some behind-the-scenes type quotes that you can find on YouTube and whatnot, and people have designed them with his words, animating, whatever. But he shares some stuff that's really just helpful to understand. You know, like one of them that sticks out to me, and I'll tell this to our clients a lot, that in order to get three acts of an hour-long show, they have to go through almost 100 story leads.
Wow.
And that's a reminder to us that, like, and he said, I think he says it later as part of this, is every story is trying to suck. And so the ones that really do suck, you just have to admit it and weed them out, you know, because it's a little bit like shopping at the grocery store. Like, if you get crap ingredients, like, you can only do so much with it, right? But if you have really good ingredients and really good characters to begin with, then you almost can't mess it up. So, you know, like if I take an amazingly ripe, delicious avocado and I just chop it up and put it on a plate, you're going to be like, this is awesome, and put some salt on it. You're done, right? But if I give you a nasty, bruised up one and try to do something with it, it's no matter what you try to do, it's gross.
Yeah.
So that is just one example of some of the lessons I've learned from Ira Glass's comments about storytelling.
That's cool. And it really speaks to, you know, being prepared so that when you do encounter the best ingredients, you'll know at minimum what not to do.
Yeah.
So that you don't mess it up.
Yeah, right. Like if you mishandle that beautiful avocado and throw it in the back seat on the way home or something, it's not going to be ready for, you know, you could ruin it. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, final question for you. What are you excited about today?
You may have heard me a couple times drink this energy drink I'm drinking called Monty. And they have sponsored us to, there's a team of me, my wife, and 10 other people, 12 of us, who are running a relay race called the Blue Ridge Relay. And we're going to, a week from today, we'll be running.
Oh, wow.
So we start Friday, the September 8th at 8 a.m. We'll be running for about 30 to 33 hours straight from Grayson Highlands in Virginia down to Asheville, North Carolina.
Wow.
It's about 212 miles, and I'm really excited about it.
Is it like a team relay?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So, you know, there's always one person from our team and only one person running, and they hand off to the next person. So each person runs three legs of somewhere between 5 to 8 miles.
Wow. Sounds, they have something similar, I think, here called Hood to Coast.
That's right. And I've done that one twice, and that's how I got hooked into running. I was not a runner. My first Hood to Coast, I went with a bunch of my classmates, and they were recruiting people, and I said, I'm not going to run. I'm not, I'm just, no. I did cross country in high school, and that was it. I was like, I'm not a runner. My body fell apart and everything hurt. But I said, I'll drive the van. And so I was like looking forward to that. I'm like, I'll be the DJ. I'll drive, you know, I'll get everybody pumped up. I'll be like, yeah. And then the week of, one of our classmates' son got sick and was in the hospital, and she had to drop out. And they were like, hey, can you run? And I was like, let me get back to you. And so I literally took my old tennis shoes, which had green stains from mowing the lawn, and ran to the shoe store, which is about two miles away, bought new shoes, hid the other old ones and or left the old ones at the store and went back later and got them, ran back. So I ran about 5 miles. And I was like, all right, that was painful, but I can do it. And so I was like, all right, I'm in. So that's how I ended up running. I ran about 12 miles on that race with zero training. I mean, I hadn't run in 5 years. And I got hooked. After that race, I was so exhilarated, but I would wake up in the morning just feeling lethargic and dead. And I was like, I think my body is telling me I need to keep running. Yeah. And so I just kept running and figured out that's how I exercise. I need to have a race that I'm training for. And these things are, you know, it's a group experience. It takes running and makes it a group sport, which is really fun. You know, you really bond with the people that you're stuck in the van with for 30 hours and smelling everybody's smells, and it's just, you know, it's intense and awesome. Yeah. It's a great story to live.
That's awesome, Nathan. Well, thank you so much for just taking some time and sharing about your life and your business. And I really appreciate just hearing more about what drives you and what drives Story Driven. So thank you.
Yeah. You know, I love talking about this stuff. I love helping people who are building their business, and you know, I'm not even close to a business mentor at this point, but I love it. I love talking about it and I love doing it. So if any of your listeners have other questions, you know, feel free to reach out to me.
That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much to Nathan for taking time to share about his work with Story Driven. And thank you for taking the time to listen to Getting Work to Work. It means a lot to me that you're here. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. While you're at it, head to gwtw.co where you can sign up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter, and find the various social media links, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, so you can be social with me. You'll even find a link to my Patreon page where you can support my work here at Getting Work to Work, as well as future documentary projects and future online courses. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm chris@chrismartinstudios.com. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.